Good morning. It is time to get up with the NBA, where some of the most famous voices are arguing against coming back to play. Are they right? Is the return in jeopardy? Woj off the top. Then, a month from the deadline, it looks less and less like a deal for Dallas and Dak. So where does it go from here? And then, don't miss Charles Barkley live on everything in the world of sports, on the court and off. We're busy. It's time to get up on a Monday right here on ESPN. Mike Greenberg with you in Bristol. Will be a full, busy day. We have a terrific 2 hours coming your way, and then 2 more hours prime time tonight, a special about the return to sports. And we will certainly deal with what feels like the biggest story right now in the NBA, where you may have seen over the weekend Kyrie Irving talking to NBA players about taking a stand and sitting out the resumption of the season in Orlando during a call with nearly 100 of the players on Friday night. On the 90-minute call, Irving reportedly made the case that resuming the season would be detrimental to the players' work on social justice and police reform. He's not the only star player who feels that way. Dwight Howard, in a statement to CNN, said, "I agree with Kyrie. Basketball or entertainment period isn't needed at this moment and will only be a distraction. Sure, it might not distract us, the players, but we have resources at hand the majority of our community doesn't have. And the smallest distraction for them can start a trickle-down effect that may never stop, especially with the way the climate is now. I would love nothing more than to win my very first NBA championship, but the unity of my people would be an even bigger championship that's just too beautiful to pass up." And then there's Steven Jackson, who also believes now would be the wrong time to play.
Playing basketball is going to do one thing, take all the attention off the task at hand right now, what we fighting for. Everybody going to be worrying about the playoffs. They're going to have all that blast all over the TV, and nobody's going to be talking about getting justice for all these senseless murders by these police, and nobody's going to be focusing on the task at hand, bro. None of these white owners have spoken up. None of them are taking a stand. Yeah, they might post a video when the season starts, are saying what we should do, but they ain't doing nothing. Playing basketball ain't gonna do nothing but make them money and take the attention of what we fighting for, what we marching for. It's bigger than all of us, and it's bigger than the game, and I'm sad that we still got to explain that to people, bro.
Now, Clippers guard Patrick Beverley seems to see it differently. He tweeted yesterday, "Hoopers, say what you want, but if LeBron James," as he was mentioning there, "said that we're hooping, we're hooping. Not personal, only business. Hashtag stay woke." So there is a lot of opinion on different sides here. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski, who just posted a story in his reporting along with our Ramona Shelburne on the very latest here, in which you spoke, among other things, the two of you, to one of the most important people at the center of all of this. What did we find out?
Greeting Michelle Roberts, the executive director of the Players Association, told Ramona essentially that, you know, the players have taken this weekend to talk about how they can use that platform that is going to be available to the league with the restart, with certainly the eyes of the world through television, and using that to continue the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, that's been, you know, at the core of the conversation among players among themselves. There's been, you know, a lot of discussion beyond Kyrie Irving about that and beyond Dwight Howard. And, you know, our sense is that most players want to play, want to resume the season, but certainly, you know, an overwhelming amount want to make sure that the league, the Players Association, work together to further this cause. And, you know, Greeny, there are other elements. Talk to, a few of the elite young players who are up for contract extensions this fall. You know, they talk to the Players Association about insurance protection in the event of, you know, career-threatening injury in a restart with shortened training camps and a higher risk. There are a lot of factors being talked about among players, but central among them, continuing this movement once the league resumes.
So many things in the piece, again, which just posted within the last hour, that were interesting. One of the points here, I'm reading it directly, a quote from Michelle Roberts: "The players are talking about it. They're not fighting about it. They're talking about it." That seemed to be a point that was important to her to make. Why is that?
Well, listen, you know, there's 450 players approximately in the Players Association. They make, you know, listen, from, you know, a max player like Kyrie Irving, a player like Dwight Howard, who's made, you know, probably a couple hundred million dollars in his career, you know, to players who, you know, have not made that kind of money and whose careers are in different places. So there's lots of different points of view. There's lots of different agendas. And there's a lot of different conversations going on in the league. And, you know, certainly social justice is one of them. It is at the core of it. Economics is at the core of this, too. You know, there's certainly a dramatic financial impact for the league to play again this season. It influences this year and next year. And listen, this is, and then going in the bubble, and that has been for throughout this process, players trying to understand what that's going to mean for them, you know, for their families. The players and the league are, you know, very close. Maybe as soon as today, you know, they'll release, you know, kind of the formal blueprint of what all of this is going to look like.
All right. The piece has a lot of detail in it as well. Highly recommended. Woj, thank you very much. We'll be staying close to you all day long. Let me bring in Jay Will and Jackie Mack this morning here on a Monday. Thank you guys both for getting up with us here. Jay Will, I'll start with you as a former player yourself. What are your thoughts on what we heard right off the top there, Kyrie Irving and Dwight Howard saying?
Well, I mean, there's, like Woj said, Greeny, there's a lot to decipher going into this decision between a pandemic, economic loss, and then social justice. As it relates just to the social justice piece, you know, Kyrie Irving, Lou Williams, Steven Jackson, they are all my brothers. We are all in the same fight. But I would vehemently disagree with them as it relates to the stand that they're taking here. There is a major wealth gap in our country. And this comes down to economics as well between African Americans and Caucasian people. So the question is, the one vehicle, and there's multiple vehicles, but the vehicle that we're talking about now in the NBA is the vehicle that has allowed us to ascend from a wealth perspective that can put us into a position to make change, to deploy resources. If you choose not to play, if you go down that path, there will be economic repercussions for that decision. Now, I understand fans from the outside say, well, that's worth doing. But my question is, what are you asking for? And if other sports leagues decide to move forward and play and the NBA decides not to play, then voices other than LeBron James or Kevin Durant, you know, those voices will be diminished to a degree because other sports leagues will be at front and center. So the question is, by not playing, what are you getting in return? What are you asking for? Are you asking for more diversity within, you know, coaches, general manager positions, ownership positions? I think you can still have that conversation with Adam Silver, considering how reasonable and practical he is, and still get those things and still play and still have that 2-month window where you're able to utilize your voice every single day to push for change, for social reform, for, you know, whatever the issues that are being addressed here. So, look, and it's easier for Kyrie and these guys to say that. Kyrie's making $30+ million this year. Lou Will's made a lot of money. Dwight Howard's made a lot of money. But there still is that next wave of young players, predominantly being African-American, that if you lose out on next season, the CBA is going to be up. The players can lose out on $1 billion worth of salary. And that stops the trajectory of a lot of African-Americans earning more in order to deploy those resources back to social reform, Greeny.
Jackie Mack, I know you spent a lot of this weekend talking to people. What were you hearing?
So it's interesting, Greeny and Jay, you're so dead on with the things that these young players are grappling with. There's a lot of self-reflection going on, a lot of self-examination. On the one hand, I think most of these young players understand this is an unprecedented time in our country and an unprecedented time in their careers where they have a chance to really affect social change. So then the question becomes, how do we do that? And I think many of them do feel, wow, if we stopped the NBA season, is that a really powerful message? So that's in one ear. In the other ear is your family saying, we can't go without another season, without any income, and who knows how that bleeds into next year. You have your agents. It's their job to explain to you the financial ramifications of that. But then it comes down to young players and some veterans. I talked to one veteran who said to me over the weekend, I have been marching. I have been using social media. I am all in on this movement. I believe we could use our league on national television as a vehicle to get our message across in ways we could never do if the season was canceled, in keeping with Adrian and Ramona's piece. Think about this, Greeny and Jay and Adrian. What if a whole team Right before the game starts, kneels before the national anthem. Wouldn't that be a powerful statement? These are some of the things these players are grappling with. It's not an easy step for them, but I do feel in the end they're going to go ahead and play.
Now, that was going to be my last question. Do you have any sense that the restart, such as it is in jeopardy based upon these things? Jackie?
I think jeopardy is a strong word. I think it's in the conversation, but I do think ultimately as a group they're going to go forward and play.
Jay, is that the sense you're getting from the people you're talking to as well?
I do. It's going to be tough because there is a pandemic that we're still in the midst of that it seems like we've forgotten about throughout a lot of these things that are happening. But at the end of the day, I'm kind of with Patrick Beverly on this one. And, you know, a lot of people on social media were talking about whether that was a jab at LeBron or not. But, you know, LeBron is leading a pretty powerful movement. And LeBron and company say they're going to play. They're going to play.
We will talk about this more later this morning. Stephen A. Smith will be with us. Charles Barkley will be with us. Guys, thank you both very much. Meanwhile, we're just getting started. Also coming up today, Troy Aikman says Dak doesn't get the credit he deserves. Our Cowboys reporter has the latest from inside the negotiations 1 month from the deadline. And then speaking of negotiation, the players in baseball have rejected the owner's proposal. Why the sport is at a stalemate? And where does it go from here? The answer's next. Get up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Get Up is brought to you by the new limited series Barkskins, tonight at 9, 8 Central on National Geographic. Let's get up and go after a busy sports weekend. Daniel Berger held off a star-filled leaderboard and defeated Colin Morikawa on the first playoff hole to win the Charles Schwab Challenge as the PGA Tour successfully completed a return to play. All 487 coronavirus tests were negative. Meanwhile, 1,000 fans, mainly military members and their guests, were on hand at Homestead Miami Speedway Sunday for the first race with spectators since NASCAR resumed in May. Denny Hamlin was your winner, the fourth of his Cup Series career. And Saints running back Alvin Kamara took note of Bubba Wallace's push to ban the Confederate flag from NASCAR races and was invited to attend Sunday's event. Here's what he said about Wallace after the race.
Before he's getting from other drivers that maybe was comfortable speaking out before this time, you know, they have kind of like a platform, you know, coming up behind Bubba to be able to say, speak their mind, whether, you know, they get backlash from some from other guys or if they, you know, get backlash from the community. I mean, it's just what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And, you know, Bubba's a – I think he's a testament to that.
Elsewhere, the Clemson football team held a protest rally with thousands of attendees on Saturday. It was organized by four players, Darian Wrencher, Mike Jones Jr., Cornell Powell, and Trevor Lawrence. Head coach Dabo Swinney was there and spoke during the event. And then to baseball, where the Players Association has asked the league to just set the schedule for the 2020 season rather than counter the most recent proposal. It has been reported that Commissioner Rob Manfred would impose something approximating a 50-game season if no agreement is reached. All right, let's dig into this here. Our insider Jeff Passan is ready to go. So, Jeff, why is today such a pivotal day in the grand scheme of things for baseball's return?
Well, Greeny, over the weekend, the Major League Baseball Players Association essentially demanded that MLB get back to them with a schedule by today. Now, per the March 26th agreement that we have spent so much time talking about, arguing over, discussing, dissecting, Major League Baseball has the ability to set a schedule. But here's the problem. It only has the ability to set the schedule after discussing and consulting it with the Players Association. And Greeny, there has been no discussion. There has been no consultation. They are not talking. They go back and forth with each other over email, sending insults, sending all sorts of things that have done nothing to progress baseball to the point where we're actually going to see games. So what we may end up seeing today is Major League Baseball coming back and saying, hey, here are some options that we have. Let's figure something out together and make sure that this is not a unilaterally implemented thing so that we continue fighting year over year into next year when the collective bargaining agreement is up and make this worse than we've made it already.
All right. So, Jeff, I want to show this video that Andrew McCutchen did, and here's why. Because I think sometimes the issues we're dealing in here become a little bit confusing and convoluted for those who've not followed it closely. So here's Andrew McCutchen with a perfect depiction of the players' view of the way the owners have handled this situation.
All right, bud, listen. If you potty on the toilet, I'll give you some juice.
Yay! Yay, juice!
All right, buddy, here's your water.
No, I want juice.
What about water in this cup?
No juice.
I know we agreed on juice. But what about water? What about water in a bottle?
No juice.
What about water in a coffee mug? You love your coffee mugs.
No juice.
Look, it doesn't matter that we agreed on juice. I'm your dad, and you're drinking water. Now, either you drink this water, or you don't drink anything at all. Who's thirsty?
Sometimes that's the best way to explain things. That's extremely well done. Doug Glanville, as you can see, has joined us as well. And here, Doug, I don't even really know what to ask you. What is your biggest takeaway from what seems to be the unbridled disaster in which baseball is living?
Well, this is the consistent history, Greeny. This is how it's gone down since the dawn of Marvin Miller coming through. I mean, it's been a saber-rattling battle. A lot of stuff happens behind the scenes. But the public perception and depiction has always been very tension-filled. And you know that the owners are looking at that bottom line. They're saying, here's the number we're trying to get to. That's the outlay we're willing to go for. And the players always have looked more on the structural side. What precedent are we setting going forward? And they're not interested ever in anything that's a cap or a discount off of their salaries. And despite what's going around us in the world, that's irrelevant when it comes to actually getting in that room, owners and players, and coming up with that middle ground, especially when you're talking about non-essential work, right? You're saying, play for our entertainment, play, and here's what you're going to do. So they're saying, okay, well, you know, give us the terms, or we're just going to continue this battle back and forth.
I totally get what you're saying. The point you're making is that to the purposes of this negotiation, the external circumstances are irrelevant. But, Jeff, we do live in the world, and the external circumstances are significant with regards to that. So how would you describe the damage that has been done to this point over the last month or so?
I think it's been enormous, and I think that public perception does matter. We're in the middle of a pandemic right now. We're in the middle of, hopefully, a historic time of societal uprising to try and make things right. We are in a place where tens of millions of people are unemployed. If the context, Greeny, is ever going to matter, it's got to matter now. And yet I understand what Doug is saying. And in the part that really stood out to me the most in that video with Andrew McCutchen wasn't the metaphor so much as it was the moment where he said, I'm your dad and I'm going to tell you what to do. That is what it feels like sometimes with owners and players, the relationship is like. Like there's this paternal element and we're going to tell you exactly what to do. That's not the way a good working relationship works. And I think the players right now, they're angry. They are fed up right now because they feel like they've been mistreated any number of ways, whether it's service time manipulation, whether it's in free agency, all these little things that have been burbling to the surface the last couple of years, they're coming out right now.
Doug, I've got 30 seconds. What happens next?
Well, I think what Jeff has he framed earlier, they're going to eventually say, well, we don't want to impose something under these circumstances. Okay, we're in a pandemic. We don't want to come up with an imposition to play with safety on the line. So I think they'll come back and say, okay, we're not going to impose it at this level. How about this? And there's still going to be issues. And they may just decide, okay, well, we'll rather you impose it. And then they may have some grievance battle back and forth that can be protracted, but it could happen behind the scenes. So we'll see what they do. But the reality is they're never on that smooth sailing public depiction. It always seems to end up in this public friction. And they got to figure out a better way to do that, given the circumstances we're all living in.
Maybe the best one-word summary I saw of this is in Jeff Passan's piece. It's up on ESPN.com right now, where the question is, will there be baseball this summer? And your answer, Jeff, was probably. That's not the answer we're looking for. I could use something a little more definitive by this time tomorrow. Thank you guys both very much. Right. Meanwhile, we will have Korean baseball for you tomorrow morning, 5:25 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN and the ESPN app. And as soon as that ends, you can spend the rest of your morning with us on Get Up. We will immediately follow every day the rest of this week. Meanwhile, not one to mince words. Wait until you hear Baker Mayfield's response to a fan who asked him not to kneel during the upcoming season. You will hear it as we continue. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
Back on Get Up, and the countdown continues. We're now within a month of the July 15th deadline for the Cowboys and Dak Prescott to work out a long-term deal. Dallas, as you know, placed the exclusive franchise tag on Prescott all the way back in March. And so let us bring in our ESPN reporter, Ed Werder, who always has more. And he does indeed this morning. Ed, what is the latest with the negotiations?
Well, Greeny, I'm told, making calls yesterday, that this has not been an extremely active negotiation at this point. And I'm told not to expect a great deal of urgency until they get about a week from the July 15th deadline for franchise tag players to sign long-term contracts. That's 1 month exactly from today. A source close to Prescott did tell me that they genuinely believe that the Cowboys have faith in Prescott and that they value him and that they can get a deal done. And I think it's worth noting, Greeny, that the last seven times a franchise tag quarterback has signed a multi-year deal, it hasn't always been before the deadline. One was signed in March by Peyton Manning in 2004. Four weren't signed until July, and two went all the way until August.
So there is precedent here, and maybe everything works out fine. Meanwhile, I know you had an interesting conversation about how Dak is respected, whether he is or isn't enough within the organization, and whether or not the front office thinks he's worth paying top money for.
Yeah, on our Doomsday podcast, Matt Mosley, my partner, and I had a chance to interview Troy Aikman, Hall of Fame, three-time Super Bowl winning Cowboys quarterback. And, you know, you have to keep in mind that this situation with Dak Prescott and the Cowboys is totally without precedent. The Cowboys in their history have never franchise tagged a quarterback. And so Aikman has always warned that that creates the potential for conflict that could harm the long-term relationship. When I asked him about that situation, here's what he told us.
In the organization, I don't know if he's gotten as much credit as he deserves or as much respect as he deserves. His rookie year, he led him to 13 wins, and there was conversations from the owner about what a great story it'd be if Romo came off the bench and led him to a Super Bowl. And I think there's comments like that that it's only human nature. You begin to question, okay, well, just how respected am I? How much do they truly appreciate what I've done? And then when you're going through contract negotiations, no matter who you are, they're always a little bit contentious.
Well, it's worth noting, Greeny, that Aikman, to put it in proper context, did mention that there have been significant sums of money offered to Dak Prescott in this negotiation. And he fully expects that there's enough incentive on both sides that his belief is that a long-term deal will be done before the deadline. And he did mention too, Greeny, I thought this was somewhat humorous, that he was the first contract, the first player to deal with Jerry Jones directly in a contract negotiation, because Jerry bought the team in 1989 and Troy Aikman was a first overall pick that year. And he said, hey, even then, the stands were half empty. The Cowboys weren't then what they are now. And even then, Jerry believed I should play for half of what I thought I was worth, he said. So Jerry's the best there has ever been in negotiating a contract in Aikman's mind. He said, "When in these situations, I'm always putting my money on Jerry."
All right, we'll see. And we'll see how much of Jerry's money he's willing to put towards Dak. We're a month away from finding out. Outstanding work, Ed. Thank you. Always a pleasure to see you. And let me bring in my guys. This morning, Lewis Riddick and Rob Ninkovich are here. I thought that was really interesting, what Aikman was saying there. Lewis, I guess I'll ask it to you. Just the reading the vibes of the situation, the Cowboys are the most covered team in the sport, so you hear from them all the time. Do you think that they fully value Dak and that they view him as an elite quarterback worthy of one of those huge contracts and going forward with him into the future?
Yeah, I think they view him, Greeny, as a franchise quarterback and as a winning quarterback and as someone who, in the greater context of the team, can lead them to the promised land. I do believe that. And I think, you know, it always takes two to tango in these situations, all right? It always takes someone to be willing to walk away from the negotiation feeling as though they didn't get everything that they want, but they're satisfied. And right now, obviously, Dak Prescott does not feel as though he's willing to walk away from this contract negotiation satisfied at this point. I mean, he feels as though there's something more that he is worth, and obviously the Cowboys feel as though at this point, relatively speaking, that they've hit a limit. And, you know, as Troy referenced, you know, they have offered him a significant amounts of money, and we don't really know exactly what that is, but we would assume it's in the $34, $35 million a year range. We would assume it's in the, you know, $90, $100 million guaranteed range. I mean, as far as guaranteed at signing, we don't know what that's going to be. We don't know what Dak wants in that regard. So I think there's so much gray area here, and the conversation always reverts back to, well, there must be something that Dallas doesn't feel as though that they need to pay for with Dak, or that they're not ultimately going to get from Dak that would cause them to push the limit, you know, with this, the contract negotiation. But, you know, when there's so much unknown, I mean, all we're left to do really is speculate. But I do believe that they think he is the quarterback of the future. They just have to agree on something as far as the final contract parameters that get this deal done, so we don't have to keep speculating about it.
Right, and they have a month to do it. Rob, let me ask you just from the standpoint of a player, and the answer can be it already is. When does this become a problem? They have a new coach. No one has been able to, you know, to gather at the facility or anything, so everything is being done virtually. He's the quarterback and they're going forward. At what point does this start to become a problem that interferes with the season?
If Dak decides to hold out and doesn't report, say, for instance, he's upset with their last offer and doesn't want to come and report to the team, like, that's a big issue. And then on the flip side of that, this offseason, they go out and they get a veteran in Andy Dalton. What happens if Dak decides to hold out and Andy Dalton goes 4-0? What happens then? What do they value Dak at that point? On the flip side of that, say he holds out and they start 0-4, then Dak has the upper hand and they have to pay him what he wants. So I think at this point, it best suits him to go and perform and to ball out. If he has the same exact numbers as last year, he's going to be a top three paid quarterback. If he goes out there and gets them one playoff win, I think he'll be the highest paid quarterback. So I think for him at this particular moment, his best interest for himself and for the team, I would think, would be to go play football and to go ball out, because he's going to have a chip on his shoulder. This whole offseason, not having an offseason, not having OTAs, we don't know about training camp. We don't know how many preseason games there's going to be. There's a lot of question marks. So I think that in his best interest, it'd be to just go play.
Okay. We'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, there's another young quarterback in the news in entirely different ways. And this time it's Baker Mayfield of the Browns, who replied to a post from a fan on Saturday. The fan was asking him not to kneel during the anthem. And Baker Mayfield responded with, "Pull your head out. I absolutely am." He later posted another message outlining his stance on kneeling. He wrote, "Everybody's so upset about my comment, doesn't understand the reason behind kneeling in the first place. I have the utmost respect for our military, cops, and people that serve our country. It's about equality and everybody being treated the same because we are all human. It's been ignored for too long, and that is my fault as well for not becoming more educated and staying silent. If I lose fans, that's okay. I've always spoken my mind, and that's from the heart." J.J. Watt, another super high-profile NFL player, also had comments on Twitter this weekend. In a reply to a fan had basically said, if you saw the original post, said, J.J. Watt will never kneel during the anthem. This is what J.J. responded. A, don't speak for me. And B, if you still think it's about disrespecting the flag, or our military, you clearly haven't been listening. So let me come back here to Lewis Riddick. Lewis, what did you think of what Baker Mayfield and J.J. Watt said this weekend?
Yeah, I think they're clearly, Greeny, sending the message to people to stop conflating or combining disrespecting the flag with protesting against police brutality and social injustices. I mean, that's clearly what they're saying. They're saying for too long, this has been confused and or blended together and or hijacked as far as what the message of the National Football League's players are as far as when they decide to kneel during the national anthem. And they said that, look, we're not going to stand for it. We're not going to be bullied into changing our mind. We're not going to be made to, you know, change our stance on this as far as how we choose to peacefully protest. And I think that's something that you see, hopefully, and I think people are expecting to become widespread throughout the National Football League once we start to play games in September. So I think they're really right now preparing fans and preparing the viewing public to see something that maybe, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, they didn't expect to see because the players backed down. I think they're telling you quite clearly this year, we're not backing down. We're moving full speed ahead.
And Rob, you made a very interesting point in our meeting this morning about the way you anticipate the leaders in locker rooms handling this situation. I'd love you to share that.
Yeah, so usually in a team setting, there is your position groups, and you have a leader in your position group who reports maybe to the team captain, and those captains come together and they talk to the head coach, and then the whole team has a general understanding of where everyone is at. And I would believe that week one, there's going to be every single team is going to come together, and they're going to know what is going to happen moving forward. I wouldn't think that week one would come and guys would go on the football field and there'd be question marks in anyone's head. So I think that within the team and in a locker room, every single team is going to have some tough discussions. It's going to come down to the leaders and the leaders in the locker room to basically come together and figure out what's going to be best for each team and how they're going to support each other. Because at the end of the day, it's all about supporting one another and the love that you have in your locker room for one another. That's going to help your team out in the long run.
What do you think, Lewis? Will these sorts of things be organization-wide? Well, these are conversations that I assume will involve everyone before the season begins.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Rob. I think these are conversations that are happening right now. I think no one's going to go out opening weekend and be disjointed and not be in unison as far as what they want their message to be and how they want their message to be viewed. I mean, teams just aren't like that. Everyone knows there's too much at stake right now. There'll be too much really attention on this entire subject. I think it's going to be one for all and all for one. And I think, again, though, I think the players right now, a lot of the big name players are really trying to make sure that people understand this is not about disrespecting the flag, and we're not going to let you turn it into that. We're not going to let you make us into bad people or people who are right now trying to disrespect our country, because many of these players have grandparents and great grandparents who fought in world wars and who were military members, and they do honor them. And so I think that's something that's very important to the players, as it should be. And really the focus needs to remain on the message, which some people don't seem to want to do, and some people will never want to do because it's just not really in their best interest to do so. But from the players' perspective, you have to applaud them. And I think they will be organized. They will be in unison. And I think all of us will be anticipating to see how team to team they handle this.
All right. No question that this conversation will continue in a variety of different ways. And so much of it involves Colin Kaepernick. And then there's, of course, the matter of whether or not Kaepernick will come back and play again. And there was one writer in Boston who was suggesting that maybe the perfect place for him would be as Tom Brady's replacement in New England. We'll get to that in a moment. Get up on ESPN.
Napa know-how. Father's Day knickknacks. That funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
We are back on Get Up, and Colin Kaepernick has remained a free agent since opting out of his contract with the 49ers in 2017. However, calls for his return to the NFL have grown louder in recent weeks, especially since Roger Goodell said the league was wrong not to listen to player protests. Which brings us to some required reading for today. This is from Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, who wrote, "A wise first step for Goodell would be to cut the charade with Kaepernick and encourage teams to sign him. The Patriots should be that team. not just for the aforementioned football reasons, but because there are few teams better equipped to handle the maelstrom that would come with a Kaepernick return. And do you really think a distraction will hamper them? They brought in media star Tim Tebow, who was nowhere near the player Kaepernick was. They won a Super Bowl the season of Deflategate. A star tight end turned out to be a murderer. I've never seen another organization that knows better how to turn inward and, to borrow a phrase, do their job. Really interesting perspective. Does Colin Kaepernick in New England make sense? Rob and Lewis are still with us, and Field Yates joins us as well. But, Rob, I want to start with you as a former Patriots player. You saw it through all of the things that came through the time that you were there in New England. How would you describe the way Bill Belichick keeps the team focused on the task at hand?
It's unbelievable how he's able to bring a team together and focus on just becoming a team and forgetting anything outside of the building that could distract you and pull you away from what you're trying to do. You know, you go back to Albert Haynesworth and Chad Johnson, a.k.a. Ocho Cinco, bringing guys like that. And we saw the quote with Tim Tebow, you know, bringing guys in that could be a distraction. Bill Belichick is able to take the whole team. You come together, you have a team meeting. He explains.